2 pitch, swing and a miss, sucked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, November 19th, 2014. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. Chet, we've got a lot of Eagles to talk about again this week. The big blowout loss to the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau on Sunday, the upcoming game against the Tennessee Titans, and we'll even take a peek ahead to the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving. I guess I have a question for you right out of the chute. Do you see this as a trap game for the Birds sitting between Green Bay and the short week to prepare for the Cowboys?
Hey, Bill. Yeah, conceivably, yes, and the Birds have lost some games like this in past years. But I'm confident that Chip Kelly won't let them take the Titans too lightly, and they'll be ready to go Sunday to show everyone that last Sunday's embarrassing loss to the Packers was something of a fluke. In fact, I would have been more worried if they had beaten the Packers somehow. You know, then they might have looked over Tennessee, thinking, hey, we're world beaters, we can do this. But the fact that they lost and lost so badly, they'll be ready. So we'll talk lots more about that as we move along here this evening.
All right, well, before we get to our special guest who's making his debut on the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, former Eagles linebacker, sportscaster, Eagles guru, recent congressional candidate, Gary Cobb. We'd like to thank Carl's Cards and Collectibles in Havertown, PA, who has donated an 8x10 photo autograph by former Eagles running back and present Eagles running back coach, Deuce Staley, to the first person that can call in and answer our Eagles trivia question. We will get to that in the second half of our show. Our shopforkisses.org phone lines will be open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to give us a call. Please note we won't be taking calls while Gary is with us, so we can talk Eagles with him for as long as we can. This is the same number, 929-477-2855. 2855 to call to answer the trivia question and win the signed 8x10 photo of Deuce Staley, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. G. Cobb, welcome to the show.
How you guys doing?
Doing all right, Gary. That was Bill who introduced you, and I'm Chet, who you know a little bit now. And let's get right to it, Gary. Bill and I both predicted that the Eagles would go to Lambeau Field and come away with a victory, and so did you, both on the radio and on gcobb.com. So, what happened? Why were we all so very wrong?
Well, I think the first thing is we saw right from the first time that the Packers got the ball that Bradley Fletcher could not cover Jordy Nelson. And the amazing thing for me was that, you know, they stayed in a defense where they left them one-on-one when you know the guy just can't cover him. He couldn't run with Jordy Nelson. So I just thought that, unfortunately, they really didn't show up ready to play their best football. I didn't think the defensive game plan, really, with their talent, didn't give them a chance. I think that what you've got to do with a guy who is as pinpoint as Aaron Rodgers is, you've got to make him be patient working down the field. You can't give him the deep throws where you got guys one-on-one who cannot, you know, they can't cover. I mean, our cornerbacks aren't the best one-on-one guys. So I'm not going to just let him know that we're in man-to-man and that the guy, you know, has no help deep. I think that just, you know, I wasn't crazy about the game plan. And the Eagles' offense just made too many mistakes. I mean, I you know, they were able to move the ball against the Packers, but they could not take advantage of the opportunities. And that's why the game got away so fast. And then, you know, surprisingly, you know, special teams gave up a score. So they did a number of things and let that game get out of hand so quickly.
You talked about the defense and especially the secondary. That's a question I've had all year. I mean, they've done an okay job, but now we see in a big game like this, it makes you wonder, is this defense, Gary, good enough to compete with other top-caliber teams, especially those like the Packers who have a dominant quarterback?
Well, I think they're going to have to play better than they did on Sunday, you know. And I really, even more than the secondary, I was really disappointed in the pass rush because they had really been stepping up and answering the challenge, and they didn't show up on Sunday. They didn't get much of a pass rush. Aaron Rodgers was back there patting the ball. They really didn't put a lot of consistent pressure on him, and the blitzes weren't getting home. So that's probably where I was most disappointed was in the pass rush. I think those guys, and have seen and know they're capable of playing better, but you just can't let a guy as good as Aaron Rodgers get time to sit back there and decide where he wants to throw and not make it a sense of urgency because he gets the ball out fast anyway. But they were letting him just pat the ball and take his time. And then he hurt him also with a couple of scrambles that really hurt them badly. So Rodgers is as good as they have in the game. I knew they were going to have to get pressure on him. I thought they could get pressure on him. I thought the defensive line would look so good and the linebackers, I thought they were going to show up and play better. And I was really disappointed in them. I know our secondary has got challenges. You can believe that in next year's draft, they're going to be looking for corners and probably a safety too.
Well, hey, Gary, I wanted to ask you, you know, the way the game turned out, it got away so quick, as you mentioned, but it seemed like the Eagles just got taken to the woodshed in all three phases of the game. Is it bad game by the players, bad preparation by Chip Kelly? Where do you start?
Well, I think it starts with the players. I think that, you know, their offensive line is starting to get some time. They have played together for a game or two, and they should start getting into a rhythm. Same thing with LeSean McCoy. So I'm disappointed in guys who are supposed to be some of the better players in the league, and, you know, they've got to play well. If your best players, if your Pro Bowl players, don't get it done for you, then you know you're going to have a game like you had on Sunday, especially against a very good team that can score. So I think they're capable of playing better. In fact, I know they're capable of playing better, but we've got to see that consistently, and we got to see that on Sunday, and we've got to see that the rest of the year. You can't afford to have as bad of a game as they had against Green Bay, and I don't care who you're playing. You don't let guys just go up and down the field like it's a joke and you're turning the ball over and, you know, they're running in, you know, an interception and then they run in a fumble. It got to where it was like a joke. And that's the type of thing that you don't want to happen. Hopefully it's a slap in the face that will wake this team up, but they're capable of playing better and I expect them to play better starting on Sunday.
Well, you make a great point there about the better players, and let me just take you one more step down the road. What is your take on LeSean McCoy at this stage of the season? From he just doesn't run the ball like the same guy we've seen the last few years.
Well, you know, one of the things is I think he's trying to do too much. I think that because they're taking carries away from him with Darren Sproles. A lot of times Sproles gets the explosive plays because, you know, Sproles has proven that he might be the most valuable player so far this year. But he has just been explosive every time he touches the ball. So they tend to give him some plays that they're taking away from McCoy because they're getting him on the field on third down. And I think LeSean is looking at the number of times he's touching the ball. He knows that Darren Sproles is going to be in there on third down. He also knows that you're going to see Chris Polk on the field in short yardage situations and on goal line situations. So I think he's pressing where he's trying to make roll off a big run, and he's looking for the big run all the time. If there are eight guys in the box and there's a safety down there to be able to take away anything outside, he still tries to take the play outside. And he's just not running with the confidence that he ran with last year. And I think it's because he's not running the ball as much. I think he started pressing. And, you know, the line has taken a while to get itself together because of the injuries this year. So all that's worked together that really kind of hurt LeSean. But the biggest thing is you got to just take what they give you. Sometimes you cannot be back there dancing and trying to pull off this big play if it's just not there. And when you get the opportunity to hit the big play, you do it then, but you can't just be out there guessing where you're trying to make every run a big play, because what you end up doing is you dance in the backfield and you end up getting trapped for losses. And that's what's been happening to LeSean.
Yeah, today he was asked if he is the same player as a year ago, and he was kind of angry that he had to be asked that question. So he wasn't real happy that people are questioning whether he is the same guy. His stats sure say that he's not the same guy. Now, this week, the Titans are the Eagles' opponent. They are another team that's not very good against the run. They're next to last, in fact, in the league. So is this a game maybe where Shady can prove that he is still a great player?
Well, it should be, and I expect him to come out and have a great game. I expect the line, the offensive line, to take over the game and dominate. You know, it's going to be as simple as that offensive line and the running back, namely LeSean McCoy, they have got to get going, because they pretty much are going to decide whether this team goes to the playoffs or not. Mark Sanchez, we all know, he's not going to be able to carry this team on his back to the playoffs. They're going to need to run the ball, football, well and effectively, and they're going to have to run it a lot. And so that's what I expect them to be on top of their game, because they've got to know that the whole season hinges on them. I mean, when the Eagles go down to D.C., go down to Dallas, they're not going to beat Dallas with Mark Sanchez throwing the ball 50 times. They're going to have to run the football effectively if they're going to beat Dallas. And it's going to be the same way the rest of the year, even with Nick Foles. Foles is dependent on that running game. They don't have the great quarterback who can just take over the game like Rodgers, throw the ball 50 times, is pinpoint on them all the time. They don't have that guy on the roster. So they've got to be able to run the football effectively. And that's why these guys, they're going to have to sit down and talk to each other and get on the same page and make this thing happen, because the running game will take this team to the playoffs. If the running game doesn't take them to the playoffs, they're not going.
Hey, Gary, you mentioned Mark Sanchez. It's a question everybody's been asking over the last 3 weeks. Who's a better quarterback for this team long term, Sanchez or Foles, or I guess somebody else?
Well, I don't know that it's either one, but I think it could be Foles. I think Sanchez, we've seen enough of Sanchez. I just don't think he just makes too many mistakes. You just cannot turn the ball over the way he does and be a consistent winner in the league. I think he's got some outstanding tools, and he probably will start for somebody next year. But I don't think Mark Sanchez has the ability to stay away from turnovers enough to be the kind of championship quarterback that we're looking for. So from that standpoint, I would side with Foles over Sanchez, because Sanchez just turns the ball over too much. And this team, they've got to cut down on those turnovers, and you got to get that ball running the football. And that's what Chip has designed his offense over, is running the football. And once he starts running it, it opens up everything else. So they got to run the football effectively.
Well, Gary, you went right where I always get told that I'm a dinosaur, because I haven't changed with the times, and I'd like to get your take on this. I still believe, and it proved out even last year in the Super Bowl, running the football and playing defense still wins championships. You with me in this high-scoring offensive world we live in now?
I think it still gets back to that because, you get in this inclement weather, and you can't throw the ball as effectively, and you need to be able to run the football. And then, when you get on the goal line, and this was a problem that Andy Reid had in years past, is because they didn't run the football and make it a point of saying, we can run the football when we want to. Because when you get down on the goal line, you've got to have the type of confidence in being able to run the football where you've got that run threat there. And because the run threat is there, it opens up everything else. And so, if you got a great quarterback, then I think it changes some of the rules. I mean, I think you got a great quarterback that can make plays and make throws and do it consistently, and he's on top of his game. I think that you can ride that quarterback. but the Eagles don't have that guy, and they're going to have.
And it didn't even work with Peyton Manning in the Super Bowl either, and he's about as good as it gets.
That's true. That's true because they took away his receivers, and they got the pressure on him. So, you know, if you're not winning the game up front, I think this is where it's still the same, which is whether you're running the ball or throwing the ball. If you're not winning up front, you're not winning. Simple as that.
Amen.
Hey, speaking of quarterbacks, Gary, what do you know about the Tennessee rookie Zach Mettenberger, the LSU alum, sixth-round pick, who I think is making his fourth start? Looks like he has a pretty good arm, at least.
Well, he's got some raw materials. I mean, he's a young guy, of course, but he's got the size and he's got a good arm. So he's capable of having some success, even though I think you can get to him and rattle him. He's a young guy, so he hasn't seen everything. And I think if the Eagles can get to him early, get some hits on him, and maybe pick off a pass by showing him something and then changing the defense. That's one thing is I want to see them, you know, change up what they're doing. I didn't like that against Peterson. They just almost threw their hands up and said, he knows what we're in, so we're just going to sit in what we're in. No, I think you want to change things up to give them something to think about, and you want to try to get to that quarterback. But now this young kid, it's going to be very important that they don't give up something big early, you know, and I don't even know why I say that when I look at that secondary and you're going like, you know, these guys. Some of those guys, I tell you, just to see them out there at their position makes you feel ill, you know. because some of these guys, they couldn't cover an old lady walking down the street. I mean, they just do not have a lot of talent in that defensive backfield. And that's why you've got to get them on the same page and where you mix up the defenses. You can't just sit in the same thing and make it easy. But you want to try to help them by, you know, showing different types of looks. And don't give up the big play. If you have you're in a situation where you're not confident about being able to cover the guy close, then give him some room and don't get beat deep. Make them work to score. If they give up big plays, they could end up losing to Tennessee. If they're going to give up the deep pass, you know, and this guy, he's got a good enough arm, and they got some receivers that can run. Right now, here, I know it's Wednesday. The game isn't until Sunday. But I will tell Nate Allen right now, I say, back up, Nate, back up, right now. Start backing up.
All right, Gary, prediction time. We were all wrong last weekend, but now it's the 2-8 Titans. They're 1-4 on the road. They've lost both of their previous non-conference games. Can we guarantee Bird fans a victory this week?
I think so. I think that, you know, the guys have been slapped in the face with that ugly loss to Green Bay, and I think they're going to come out ready to go, and I expect to see that running game to get on track. And I think that these guys are a good team to be playing at this particular time. And, you know, some people say, oh, well, you only beat bad teams. Well, you know, there are some teams that don't beat bad teams. So, you know, you got to go out and take care of business. And I like the fact that they've been able to do that against these bad teams. And I expect them to come out and jump on Tennessee right away and let them know that, look, this is not a game that's going to be up for grabs. And the Eagles are going to take this. So that's what I expect to happen. And I'm just hoping that the defense, those corners have got to back up, give people room, don't get beat deep. And I think the Eagles will have success against the Tennessee offense as well.
Well, let me take you 4 days further. How do you like us lining up against the Cowboys on Turkey Day?
Well, you know, I think it's going to be a close game. I think this kind of game can go either way. I like the Eagles' chances, though, because Tony Romo is going to be coming. He's not going to have a lot of time to rest. They're going to play on Sunday night against the Giants. I think the Giants are going to play them hard. I think that, you know, every time you play in the NFC East, you might win, but you're going to take your lumps. I think they're going to get some shots on Tony Romo, and I don't think he's going to be effective coming back so soon playing on Thursday afternoon after playing on Sunday night. That's a lot to ask when you've got a bad back. So I like the Eagles in that because I think the I like the matchups. I think the Eagles can slow down Murray, but I think they would have more trouble if Romo was healthy. I don't think he's healthy, so I like the Eagles' chances against the Cowboys.
Well, I'm with you. I want to enjoy my turkey just like everybody else. That's for sure.
That's right.
I have one more question.
Find a way to win.
That's right. I have just one more question for you before we turn you over to Chet. But Marcus Smith, what do you see?
Uh-oh.
I mean, we've moved this guy from outside linebacker now to inside linebacker. He's not getting on the field. He did dress, but he didn't play again. It's our first-round draft pick, and as we know, you can't miss too many times in the first round and be a successful organization in the long haul. Can this guy – is it too early to give up on him? I just don't like the fact that they're changing his position. They must be seeing something that they don't like, and that really worries me.
Well, the big thing that I think that he's got to show is how bad does he want to play? You know, how bad does he want to play this year, in his rookie year? And he's got to show a sense of urgency. And, you know, the young man, he's got the athleticism and the size and the speed and everything to be able to be an outstanding player. But a lot of times in the NFL, you know, it's how much does that player want to succeed? And I think they need to sit down and have a talk with him and make sure that he knows that what's expected of him and the kind of effort that they want to see. Because I was really kind of alarmed when I heard Chip Kelly saying, well, he's got to earn our trust in order to get on the field. Well, the way you do that is you practice well. You practice hard, you practice well, you get the job done, you're smart, you know what's going on. And so I'm concerned about him because I haven't seen that motor that you need to see in a linebacker. And your linebackers are supposed to be some of your toughest players. And if you're not going to put a linebacker out there to cover a kick, I don't know who you're going to put out there. You know, and that says something that you don't like his effort. There's something you don't like about him that when you don't put a young linebacker out there to run down on a kickoff team. I think you put all your linebackers that aren't starting, they got to be on the kickoff team. They're tacklers. And so that's alarming. And, you know, this young man has got to show that he wants to be on the field very badly. And that's the type of effort and intensity that teams want to see and that we got to see out of this young guy. I mean, he hasn't shown it yet because, you know, you want to see a sense of urgency where this means a lot to you. And then you want to see the aggressiveness out of the linebacker. And I think some of those have been lacking from him.
All right. Yeah. Now, Gary, before we let you go, this is the segment of the show that we call Rapid Fire, where we put you in a hot seat and hit you with about a dozen questions that you'll answer in brief but honest fashion. No pressure. Here
no
we go.
No problem.
All right. Now, Gary, the Eagles will beat Tennessee this Sunday, but then how will they do over those next three crucial games, the pair of meetings against Dallas, another one of your former teams, and a home game against defending Super Bowl champion Seattle in between? How will they do in those three games?
I think they'll split. I think that, you know, they'll probably split with Dallas. I think that they're going to find a way to beat Seattle. Seattle's not the same team that won the Super Bowl. So I think Seattle matches up well. The Eagles match up well against Seattle because they don't have outstanding receivers. They run the ball well. The Eagles stop the run well, but they can't cover. And I think it's a good matchup for the Eagles. So I like them against Seattle, and I think they'll split against Dallas.
All right. Can the Eagles and Chip Kelly win a Super Bowl in the next few years with Nick Foles or Mark Sanchez at quarterback?
No. I think they're probably going to try to find another quarterback. I think it's unlikely that they can do it. You know, I just got to see more. Foles has been inconsistent this year, but he finds ways to win. I don't know, though, that he beats the outstanding teams. That's the thing. I don't know that they're ready to beat the outstanding teams. The good thing about it is in the NFC this year, I don't think there is an outstanding team. So they might be able to make it further than we think. So maybe I'll say, yeah, they can find a way to do it because there's not a special team, I don't think, in the NFC this year. For that matter, maybe in the league there's not a special team.
Yeah. Hey, on Philly Sports Talk today, the overwhelming majority of viewers who graded the Eagles' 2014 draft gave it either a C or a D. What's your grade for this draft class so far?
So far, I have to give them a D because, I mean, we've seen, Jordan Matthews. And after that, you know, I can't say, you know, all that excited about, you know, what we've gotten out of it. You know, we've got Matthews and you know, everything else. It hasn't been exceptional. You know, there's been some guys have worked in, but it hasn't been an exceptional job. But in fact, you know, because you're getting nothing out of the number one, and it looks like you just flat out just missed it on the number one, in that you won't even let him run down on kickoffs if he's a linebacker. You know, something is terribly wrong to make that type of mistake.
Yeah, as a former linebacker, what grade would you give the Birds' linebacking crew this season as a whole?
Linebacking crew, I'd probably give them a B because I think they've been good. The secondary has been the problem, but D'Amico Ryans played well, and of course he got hurt. Connor Baldwin has had an outstanding year. Trent Cole has played well. Brandon Graham has played well. Michael Kendricks has played well. So I think the linebackers have done a good job. You know, injuries has hurt them with Kendricks missing time, and now with D'Amico Ryans missing the rest of the season. Injuries hurt them. Casey Matthews had a pretty good game. So I think the linebackers have had a good season so far. Hopefully they'll continue it.
You mentioned the problems in the secondary. What is the Birds' biggest need for next season?
Well, the biggest need, I think, is probably at the cornerback position. They also could use another safety or two. So I basically said everybody. Well, you know, you've got Malcolm Jenkins, you know, who's a veteran player. Other than that, you got a nickelback and Brandon Boykin, but your corners, your starting corners. You know, I don't think you say, well, boy, we've got these outstanding cornerbacks, and they're going to lead us to a Super Bowl. I don't think you get anywhere near it. I don't think you get there with those corners. So, I think that's what they got to address that. ASAP.
Now let's go back in time a little bit, Gary. You played 3 years with the Eagles, 85 to 87, those last two seasons under Buddy Ryan. What made Buddy such a great coach of defenses?
Well, the thing Buddy had was, first of all, he believed in being aggressive. He was ahead of the league for a few years back in the mid-80s, 85, 86, and 87 or so, and especially 85 with the Bears. He was ahead of the league. His design, his blitz designs, were ahead of the league, and it was a great plan for him. It was a lot of fun. He would turn you loose, and the big thing about Buddy was he was smarter than a lot of people gave him credit for. He's a brilliant defensive coordinator, it's just a shame that they weren't able to get things going offensively at the level that they could have. And he could have brought maybe a championship to here for the Eagles. But Buddy was a great defense coach, and I enjoyed playing for him.
Here's a tough one, Gary. You played throughout the 1980s when there were some great quarterbacks in the league. Off the top of your head, rank the top four in order from that era. You had Montana, Marino, Elway, Jim Kelly, Fouts, Esiason. Who were the top four, 1 through 4?
Well, you definitely have to go with Montana, put him up on the top. And then when I think about, Jim Kelly was an outstanding quarterback. So you had Montana. Let me see. I want to make sure I don't miss anybody. Montana, he definitely was the top. And then I'll throw Jim Kelly in there. And
Marino, Elway, and Fouts I had.
Oh well,
wasn't Warren Moon in that era as well?
We played against Marino. Marino was a great quarterback, outstanding guy, to lead his team. And then talk about Moon, you talk about Fouts. Played against all those guys, and so I probably would go with that with the ones that I've named, which is Montana, Marino probably number two. I put Fouts in there, and then Kelly.
All right. That's a great era for quarterbacks, that's for sure. Who was the craziest teammate on those mid-'80s Eagles teams?
Probably it was Jerome Brown. He was he believed in stirring it up and things. So he was a wild guy and a lot of fun. But they had a number of guys in there that were right on the edge, like, you know, Seth Joyner, who was always on the edge. I saw the video they had of Seth coaching the kids team, and he was giving it to him. But he was, you know, definitely a lot of fire on that team. Andre Waters was an aggressive player, and a lot of those guys were. But I probably would say Jerome was the one that was the craziest and wildest.
Hey, one basketball question. Will the 76ers set a new NBA record and win fewer than 9 games this season?
Well, let me see. Is 2 fewer than 9? I don't think it'll be 2 and everything, but I think they got a chance to break the record. I you know, unfortunately, you know, I tell you, man.
Yeah, they're not very good.
But those guys, I mean, you know, they well, hopefully somebody watched the game. You know, they probably might have a game where it's going like, did anybody see the game like that? You know, only the announcer saw the game probably. Might have a game like that.
This update, they're leading the Celtics by 7 late in the first quarter, so tonight could be the night they get that first win. Hey, as a follow-up, sorry to remind you of this, Gary.
Yeah.
You played on some bad teams back in the 80s. Now, how tough is it mentally knowing that every time you go out there, you're probably going to lose?
Well, you know, in football, it's not as bad because you don't play as many games. And then, you know, some of the teams I played on, we lost a lot of close games, too. So that's what's kind of frustrating, you know, when you're losing close games. But it's tough, but, you know, you're professional. You got to prepare, be ready, and be ready to play. So, you know, it adds up on you. It's not fun. But playing the game, you know, I still enjoy playing the game. I mean, you know, you don't want to lose, but, you know, I enjoy, you know, preparing and being ready to play. And, you know, you're just responsible for doing your job. That's the big thing on a football game is you got to do your job. And there are times we played on some good teams with some good defenses where we didn't have much offensively. So, but, you know, you do what you can do. That's all it comes down to. And, That's, you know, you're a professional and you got to carry yourself as a professional.
What's tougher, trying to sack a quarterback or running for public office?
That's a good question. well, you know, they're, I don't know, it's pretty tough for me to compare the two. You know, neither of them are easy.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed doing both of them, so... That's a tough question. I think sometimes, you know, I would say one, and other times I would say another, depending on the circumstance.
And finally, Claude Giroux, the Flyers captain, is also called G by his friends. So since you had the nickname first, does he have to give you any kind of royalties or anything?
I tell you what, I'm going to let him know my bank account number, and he can go ahead and just go ahead and transfer him in there. He's a great player, and I think that the nickname, you know, you really don't decide on who they call you. So I don't mind sharing it with them.
All right. Nice job, Gary Cobb. You've done it. You've survived your visit to the Rapid Fire Hot Seat.
My pleasure.
Hey,
G, my pleasure.
G, I have one final question for you to tag along on the hot seat. You spent you spent 2 years, a good part of 2 years down there in Dallas. Any love for them folks down there? You make your home here in Philadelphia, so you got any love for them boys down there in Big D?
Well, some of the guys that I played with, of course, you build a bond with players, but, you know, those guys are long gone out of the game. But I still see, you know, guys that I've seen and played with years ago. I enjoyed them, but I don't root for the Cowboys, no. I'm an Eagles fan, and I want to see the Birds win, and I don't know any of those guys that are playing for the Cowboys now. So I really don't root for the star.
I'm with you.
Thanks, Gary.
I'm with you.
All right.
All right, Gary. Well, I think we've taken up more of your time than we were supposed to. So we appreciate you coming by and hope maybe we can do this again.
Okay, no problem. And go Birds. Get this thing done. E-N-D-L-E-S.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Gary.
All right. All right. Bye-bye.
All right. All right, Chet, that was good. Let's thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, by logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website. You become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. And, Chet, I have to tell you, now is the time. If anybody wanted to go to this website and shop at any of these stores for Christmas and all that, you could shop now if you're already an Internet shopper. Get cash back on your purchases, and all the purchases go to Kisses for Kyle's Foundation. So this is a great time if anybody has been listening in and has put it off. Now's the time. It's Christmas time.
Sounds good to me.
All right. Well, let's get to our Eagles trivia question to win the Deuce Staley autographed 8x10, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. So here you go, partner. You haven't even heard the question, so here we go. David Akers holds the record for most regular season games played in Eagles history with 188. I am second with 183, but I was a position player. Can you name me?
Akers has played more games than anybody else. You're kidding me.
Nope. David Akers.
I did not know that.
Yep. David Akers holds the record for most regular season games played in Eagles history with 188. I am second with 183, but I was a position player. Can you name?
How about that?
There you go.
Good question.
Clock's running.
Good question.
All right. Well, just a reminder, to shopforkisses.org phone lines are open at 929-477-2855, so feel free to call throughout the remainder of the show. This is also the same number to call to answer the trivia question, so write it down, 929-477-2855. All opinions are welcome, but please be respectful of other people's opinions. Well, Chet, let's talk a little more Eagles-Packers, because last week our buddy Mark McClain, who's a frequent caller here, he called the show and made a great point as far as the Eagles are concerned in my mind, and he said that the Green Bay game would set the bar for where this team stood. And I think we all agreed, and everybody, we all thought they were going to go into Green Bay and take care of the business, and they got taken to the woodshed themselves. So where do they stand? I mean, it seems to me the fans have blown this game off as, oh, well, it happens, let's move on, nothing we can do about it. You know, I don't see it that way, because I think the same fans would be saying, if we'd have done to them what they did to us, we'd be talking Super Bowl. So,
yeah. You
know, the old wise man once said, you're never as good as you think you are when you win, and you're never as bad as you are or think you are when you lose. What do you think?
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. If that was a barometer, then, well, this Birds team is definitely not a legitimate Super Bowl contender, that's for sure. But I do think they are still a playoff team. They'll have to prove that, of course, over the next month. But they're not going to make it to Arizona if they don't do a better job defensively against top offenses like Green Bay's, and if they don't get a more consistent running game, too, as we discussed with G. Cobb. I mean, they got to play better as far as getting the pass rush and doing the pass coverage better. That secondary is not real good right now, again. And they do have to get a more consistent running game, be it with Shady McCoy or Sproles or a combination of both, whatever. So they still have some work to do, but, yeah, they're not as bad as that game. They're not as good as they looked when they beat the Giants or, you know, maybe one or two other games where they looked very impressive. They're somewhere in between, like a lot of teams are. I mean, heck, the Broncos lost to some bad team last week, too. So, you know, that can happen in the NFL. It's a long season. It's, you know, every week's a new game. They should thrash the Titans this week, and then they got that big three or four games ahead, the Cowboys twice and the Seahawks. So let's look at the bigger picture and see how they do over that span of three or four games.
Well, I guess the thing that bothers me the most about the whole game is I'm not sure where to start. Was it the offense that was terrible, the defense that was terrible, the special teams that was terrible? You know, the defense gave up 50, so I guess you kind of have to start there. But the offense really did absolutely nothing either. And, you know, they turned the ball over. And, I mean, it just – I'm not sure where you start. And to me, that's a little troubling. You know, in the Denver loss that you mentioned to the Rams, it was at least a close game. This game wasn't close. And it almost looked like Aaron Rodgers knew what the Eagles were going to do. And I think the success that the Eagles have had – And we talked about this last week with Bill Davis, is that he was always dialing up the right calls and getting pressure when he needed it and doing all those things. And, man, they had no clue. They had no answers the other day.
Yeah, and G. Cobb mentioned that, too. He questioned Billy Davis's game plan for that. They just weren't getting the pressure. And, you know, some of the coverages, I saw Gary Cobb in an appearance the other night, and he was saying that they – played too much man-to-man. They should have played a little more zone because they were just getting beat badly one-on-one, and they just didn't make any adjustments in-game. But, I mean, you got to give the Packers some credit, too. Aaron Rodgers is just playing out of this world right now, especially at Lambeau. So, I mean, they've got it firing in all cylinders right now, and now it's up to the Eagles to get back to doing what they were doing before last week. Because, remember, they were playing pretty good the previous couple of weeks also. So, you know, give them time. They don't have an Aaron Rodgers, unfortunately, and that's going to be something they're going to have to overcome. And nobody knows just how good Sanchez is going to be over the long haul, and it's his team right now, at least until, you know, probably week 16 and maybe even beyond if he's successful.
This is the same guy that people were calling Sanchez last week, or are we talking about the same guy?
Yeah, after one game when he did okay, he wasn't fantastic, but he was okay, and they won convincingly. But, yeah, he's never going to be an Aaron Rodgers or a Peyton Manning. If he's throwing the ball more than 30 times, that's not good. You want to have him spread it around, but maybe 30 times at the most, and you want to get that running game going. That is going to be so important. And we've said it a couple of times. We've had some false starts, but this has to be the week that McCoy gets going. He had that one real good game against, I guess it was the Giants. Beyond that, he's struggled. Even though he had 80-plus yards or whatever on Sunday, he's still only averaging 3.7 yards a carry and just not looking like the player he was last year, even though he says he is. Prove it.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And to G. Cobb's point, too, I think, you know, his comment about Darren Sproles getting a lot of quick hit carries and you know, McCoy being out at the goal line and those things with Polk, I think that's because I don't think those guys took those snaps away from McCoy. I think McCoy gave those snaps away by the way he's playing. I think they're fortunate that they have those couple guys or they'd be in big trouble.
And he has just about the same exact number of snaps as he had last year at this point. So he's not really losing that many snaps because they are getting, I think, a few more plays off this year than last year. But the problem is he's just not being as successful as he was last year. You can blame some of that on the line being injured or, you know, out with suspension earlier in the year. It's not the same guys playing every single game. But a lot of it's on Shady, too. He's just, you know, not settling for or not going ahead and just taking the 1 or 2 yards that's there. He's trying to do too much and end up losing 3 or 4 yards. He's not having a great season. Sure, he's going to have over 1,000 yards, but that's only 60-some yards per game. That's no big deal in the NFL anymore. So he's got to get it going, and this Sunday against Tennessee is a great time to start.
Well, I'm with you, and I hope you're right, because but given the choice, I'd rather see it Thursday than Sunday. I think they could probably win Sunday without him. Thursday, they better run the football because the Dallas Cowboys are going to run the football over and over and over again at that Eagles defense. And the Eagles offense is not going to be able to go 3 and out, or they may not see the ball for 8-10 minutes at a clip because Dallas is going to just keep trying to run the ball at them. So
yeah,
I think the Eagles have to be able to control the ball themselves.
I really, really want to see them steal that game in Dallas because they're probably going to go into that game tied still for the division lead. And if they lose that first game in Dallas, they're going to be a game behind, and then Dallas, of course, will hold the tiebreakers. And then it's going to put all the pressure in the world on the Eagles to, A, beat Seattle, and then, B, beat the Cowboys the following week in Philadelphia. Because, you know, if that doesn't happen, suddenly the Cowboys are in the driver's seat. So I would love to see them get that win on Thanksgiving Day down in Big D. That would make me feel a lot better about this season.
Oh, absolutely. Nothing like being on top and having everybody chasing you than like you say, you know, all the pressure being put back on the Eagles. That's not where they want to be, especially with some question marks that they've got. And they were exposed
exactly. The
other day, most certainly. Well, listen, let's slide over and talk about the Flyers just a little bit. They didn't bounce back very well from their long layoff. They got beat up by the Canadiens 6-3 the other night. It looks like they're going to be without Claude Giroux, but the word actually you got the word that he was warming up before the game tonight and may actually play here in the next night or two. But that being said, they brought up Scott Laughton from the Phantoms, what looks like an extended stay. I'm kind of excited about that. I want to see this guy get an opportunity to really play. So, but they'll be right back in full swing with four games between tonight and with a national televised game at Madison Square Garden against the Rangers all the way till next Monday. They've got four games in just 5 nights.
Yeah, it's weird, this NHL schedule. I mean, twice in the last 2.5 weeks or so, the Flyers have had like 5 days off once and then 4 days off, and now they're going to have, you know, four or five games in just over a week. It's crazy. And, yeah, they got to get moving again. They were playing pretty well when we talked last week, and then, of course, they had a little setback, losing a couple of games over the weekend, giving up a lot of goals, a lot of power play goals, too. So that's a real concern. The penalty kill, which looked so good earlier in the season, all of a sudden has not looked so good. As for Giroux, I don't know. There were all sorts of reports and tweets that, you know, he's going to be out there for the pregame skate, see how he does. He might play. But he showed up in a walking cast, or a walking boot, anyway, not a cast. So, and the reporters said he did not look real happy. So I don't know if that was because everybody's just wondering or questioning him, or if he was already told that he's not going to play no matter what. We don't know. I guess we'll find out in the next 15 or 20 minutes. But, yeah, the Flyers got to get it going, and this is a key time right now because they do have a lot of important games over the next week or 10 days. So let's go, Flyers.
Yeah, I think it's interesting the way the they came out of the break, they played one game, and now all of a sudden, and maybe it's the Giroux injury that's driving this whole thing, but it seems like the Chiefs are starting to juggle lines already. And, you know, hockey's a funny game because I don't really know how much of a difference that makes. Those guys are always good. You get guys that they get traded, and the next thing they're playing on a top line, and they're scoring goals and making plays. But R.J. Umberger, he's trying to get him jump-started. He's trying to get LeCavier jump-started. And Shen gets moved all around the place. So, you know, I guess he's just looking for combinations to find out who can be hot and what can happen here to stay afloat as they move forward into December.
Yeah, and I was just going to say some. Oh, I was going to also mention about LeClaire and Lindros. They're going to both be in town tomorrow night. I guess they're both going to go on the Flyers Hall of Fame. What are your memories of those two guys, LeClaire and Lindros?
Well, I tell you what, I was thinking about this the other day because, you know, as I sent my my Lindros jersey to get signed up there by Carl at Carl's Cards in the private signing with Lindros. And, you know, thinking back, other than the Broad Street Bully era, was something special, and we were kids, so it was probably even more special. But watching Eric Lindros play is like nothing that this city has ever seen before. I mean, to me, he was just as good a hockey player. Unfortunately, we didn't get the end result, but what a tremendous talent he was. And John LeClaire was a good player, probably a great player, or he was a good player who became great when he was surrounded by Eric Lindros. And then when you put Mark Recchi, another Hall of Famer, on the other wing there for a while, that was just a special time. And those guys were great players. But Eric Lindros is right up there. Well, heck, if I'm getting a jersey signed by him, he's right up there at the top of the list.
I remember his first year, the first couple of games I saw him play, I just was amazed. I mean, a guy that big who could also move pretty well, and, of course, you know, he was a guy who could score, but also who was never afraid to run over guys. And he was just really, really exciting to watch. He took over a lot of games. He won the MVP in, I guess, 95 in the shortened season. And it's a shame he never got the cup that he wanted with the Flyers or the one that we wanted to see him get. But, yeah, what fun it was to watch him and LeClaire and Recchi and then him and LeClaire and Renberg. Those were some good times. And I'm glad to see that Lindros and Clark and company, you know, patched things up with the Winter Classic a few years ago. And, you know, now he's welcome back in Philadelphia. And this is a nice honor that he and LeClaire are going to be going into the Flyers Hall of Fame tomorrow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well deserved. And it would have been a disservice had Lindros been held out for all the personal stuff that went on, because on the ice, I don't know, he had such soft hands as a player and such hard hands as a fighter. I mean, he could go with any of them and take care of himself and then put the gloves back on, sit his 5 minutes, put the gloves back on and go out there and score two or three goals with just great hands.
And I saw yesterday that Michael Renberg, who was actually working in Sweden as a hockey announcer, is actually going to be at the ceremony tomorrow night at the Wells Fargo Center. So that'll be nice to have that whole line reunited for one night.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It will be fun, and it'd be great to be there. It'll be the fans will give those guys their due, and much well-deserved. Absolutely.
Yep.
Well, hey, let's talk about your 76ers. They're 0-10. They lost all three games during the week that we knew they would. Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. I think they were down to Dallas by 50-something after three quarters. I didn't really know that was possible.
I turned it on at halftime, and it was 73-29 that game. I could not believe
unbelievable.
It.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
And then they lose the nail-biter the next night at the buzzer. Crazy.
Right. Now I guess they're considered at full strength. I mean, they're tough to watch. This week they've got Boston tonight, which you've already predicted, at least to me, that they're going to win that game. We'll see if you're going on in public and say that. But Phoenix at home, they're at the Knicks, and then home against Portland before we're on the air next week. Can they win any of these games, do you think?
They can beat the Celtics. They can beat the Knicks for sure. I'm not saying they're going to, but they are definitely two winnable games. Tonight's home game against the Celtics and then the one up at Madison Square Garden. The best opportunity is probably tonight against this team that used to be such a great rival of theirs, the Celtics. Unfortunately, neither team is very good right now. In fact, they both stink. There, I said it. So since it is a home game and the Sixers know that it's such a great opportunity, hopefully they'll get it together enough to get that first W before another string of losses.
Well, you know, Chad, I'm going to put you on the hot seat yourself. Some of our Facebook friends have been posting out there, who will have more wins, the Eagles or the Sixers?
Yeah, well, a few weeks ago I predicted the Sixers would have 14 wins, and the Eagles, I was saying, would be at the very best 11-5 or 12-4 in the regular season anyway, so that would be the Sixers. But now that I'm watching the Sixers, I don't know. I think they are going to have less than 14 wins, and they may well challenge that 1972-73 season futility record of 9-73. I don't want to see them do that, but it may very well happen. They are not a good team.
No. And, you know, it's kind of, I mean, we're only 10 games in, and I guess it was even before they lost the 10th one. And, you know, it's starting to go national, be national news now just about how bad this team is. And, you know, it's got to be tough. It's got to be, mentally, it's got to be tough to come to work. It's, you know, they're getting paid, and they're getting paid a lot of money to play in that league, even these young guys. But it's got to be tough to come to the arena every night and know that you have no chance and that you're the laughingstock of the league. And for most of these guys, let's just pick a number, 8 of the 12, they're not part of the future.
No, they're
going
they're
through the motions
to
make
the
their kick. What's that?
Yep. they're D-League players at best, most of those guys, so they shouldn't even be in the NBA. But, yeah, it's got to be mentally draining. That's why I asked G. Cobb about it. When you're on a bad team, you know you're probably going to lose. It's got to be tough. And, yeah, he's right. It's a different sport, football and basketball. I mean, anytime, any given Sunday, there is that chance that a football team could win. But this Sixers team, I mean, let's face it, when they're playing San Antonio or, you know, even the Clippers or the Bulls or I guess Cleveland now with LeBron, they're going to start to get it together. They're not going to win this year. They're just not. I mean, last year, you know, they had Young and Hawes at least part of the year and Evan Turner for over half of the year. They had a shot most nights of, you know, scoring the upset. But with this crew, it's going to be a major upset anytime they win a game.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be the team that loses will be the laughing stock.
Hey, I know we're almost out of time here, but speaking of money, as we were a minute ago, what was your reaction to Giancarlo Stanton's 13-year, $325 million contract?
You know, I actually said to my son, Mike, who's a crazy baseball guy, I said, you know, it almost makes me not want to go watch any more baseball.
Mm-hmm.
It's just ridiculous. When does it end? When does it end? And then he's got a no-trade deal in there, and then I believe he can opt out when he's 30 years old, I think, or something like that. There's some other language in there. And you know, the Florida Marlins don't put anybody, Miami Marlins, don't put anybody in the building to begin with. I can't imagine how many tickets they would have to sell to pay this guy's contract, and how are they going to add any more players? It's just a bad business decision in my mind. I just don't get it.
Yeah, I was shocked. I mean, especially from the Marlins, who've been notoriously cheap in recent years. You don't wonder how long until they're ready to say, okay, somebody else can have him, you know, give us a bunch of prospects, and he's yours. He's certainly not going to be there for the 13 years. We know that.
That's right. That's right. And you know, they paid him more than Miguel Cabrera, who's, you know, just won the Triple Crown and almost won the Triple Crown a second time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I love Stanton. Great player. But I don't believe he's ever been a 300 hitter with all the power he's got.
Yeah, and this is like you're alluding to. This is going to jack up salaries for everybody else now, because they're going to say, hey, if he's getting that kind of money, I'm as good as him, you know, like the Cabreras or Mike Trout, you know, come on. They're going to want their share too.
That's right. Yep. I think it's bad for baseball. More power to Stanton. He got his money, and you know what? They can't take it from him, so more power to him for sure.
Yep.
All right. Well, listen, I guess we're not going to give away our 8x10 from of Deuce Daly today, but I will tell you, Chet, just because we have a second before we close, that I'm going to tell you the answer, unless you want to make a guess. Okay, David Akers holds the record for most regular season games played in Eagles history with 188. I am second with 183, but I was a position player. Can you name me? Go ahead.
16. So we're looking at a guy who played like 12 years, 11, 12 years. Brian Dawkins.
I will tell you this. He played 13 years, if that helps you.
Yeah, I give up.
It would be that Brian Dawkins.
I said Brian Dawkins. Did you hear me say that?
No.
I did. He's the only guy that I thought of who, you know, in the last 30 years or so played for 11 or 12 years at least with the team. So there you go. Check the tape, Bill.
Right.
Check the tape.
All right. Well, hey, speaking of Carl's Cards and Collectibles helped us again with this. They just completed a big week of signings with our buddy Ray Dittinger in the store the other day. It was a massive success, by the way, Chet. They also had the private signing with Eric Lindros. Leading up to the Christmas, Carl's will have John LeClair in the store December 13th, and then they'll have John Dornbus, Cody Parkey, and Donnie Jones on December 21st. Might even be a visit from Santa Claus as well. So we'd like to thank Carl's Cards for their participation on the show, our special guest G. Cobb, Gary Cobb, as well as Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chet Chesko, this is Bill Furman. hoping you enjoyed the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, Thanksgiving and Dallas Eve, November 26th at 7 p.m., as we talk all things Philly sports. You can listen through our Facebook page at Philly Press Box Radio or on the Internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio.